Hi, everyone. Welcome to the 19th Hole Golf Show. My name is Ryan Ballingy. Good to have you here with us. You can email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com, or you can follow me on Twitter, @RyanBallingy. You can follow Golf Newsnet on Twitter also, if that's your desire. The handle there is Golf Newsnet. Or if you're a Facebook person, facebook.com/GolfNewsNet. Give us a like there as well. So I want to get into a couple different issues in this week's show that are actually golf-related. We won't talk so much about taking pride in your content or issues of journalism or plagiarism or any of that good kind of stuff, which I appreciate that you listened to the show last week and gave such wonderful feedback to those of you that wrote emails or sent me tweets. I really, really appreciate it. I always appreciate the feedback. And for those of you who don't subscribe to us through iTunes because you have an Android device or prefer to use another service, specifically if you have an Android device, we've been accepted into what's going to be a forthcoming podcast service through Google Play Music. So we'll give you more details on when that comes out. We really don't know the answer to that, but we know we've been accepted to that. So you can download the 19th Hole Golf Show sooner than later through your Android device through the Google Play Store, which we're really excited about. Okay, enough self-promotion for a few minutes. Let's talk about some substantive issues in golf. Namely, a guy named Smiley, Carter Smiley Kaufman. Smiley is his middle name. And his brother Connor's middle name is Lucky, younger brother. But Smiley Kaufman's about to turn 24. And he turned 24 in November, and he is a PGA Tour winner. In just his fifth career PGA Tour start, he shot 10 under 61 in the final round at TPC Summerlin for the Shriners Hospitals for Children Open title, second event of the PGA Tour season, his second as a PGA Tour player. He earned his card through the web.com tour in the prior season, so this year he earned it for their 2015 season. Coming out of LSU, he finished T64 in the qualifying tournament, so he earned his status that way. He won the United Leasing Championship on the web.com tour. He did that as part of a stretch where he had a couple of top four finishes on the bookends of that or in that stretch, and found himself in the end sixth on the money list, and that got him his PGA Tour status. And then, what do you know, takes advantage, coming from seven behind on the final day on a golf course where you can go low, really, rather easily, and won the title. And I love when this thing kind of happens, where a guy goes out, posts a number, and then just sees guys fall, until it's just one guy left. And I like that to happen every once in a while, because it is fascinating when it's executed properly on TV, to see the psychology of a guy going from posting a number thinking, well, I probably don't have a chance, to, well, maybe I do have a chance, to, oh, I definitely have a chance, to, now I've got to sweat out each of these guys, and if I do, I have a great chance, and then I've won. And in the space of what amounted to 2.5 hours for Smiley Kaufman, that process unfolded as player after player went through and just could not get to 16 under par, could not tie him. And the last guy to have a chance to take a crack at him was the 54-hole leader, Brett Stagmeier, who had just earned his PGA Tour card through the web.com Tour Finals, a guy who was about to give up on golf going into this year, and had a 22-footer to tie to send it to a playoff, and came up about a foot and a half short. And then Smiley Kaufman's the winner. And I thought two things were very fascinating about that moment. First, that Stagmeier looked, for him, upset that he had not pulled it off, that he couldn't guarantee himself two additional years beyond this year of safety on the PGA Tour, but that by finishing tied for second, he has pretty much locked himself up a good spot for the year on the PGA Tour. Just needs one more good finish, and he's good for next season, which is, it's pretty cool to be able to say it two tournaments into the year. And then on Smiley Kaufman's case, the kid is 23. He's going to be 24 soon. At 23, and I'm 32, I no grasp of how special a moment like that could really be. No idea. And I don't know if he knew he didn't know, or if he knows he doesn't know, or it doesn't entirely register with him yet what this means for him. And I don't, for that matter, I don't think Jordan Spieth really understands, but they will later. But to see the look on Kaufman's face, where it all dawns on him, I'm safe for this year, I'm safe for the next two seasons after that, so I'm good through August 2018. I am in great position now to do all of the things I want to do in my rookie season in golf. I get to play in the Masters, the PGA Championship, the Players' Championship. If I can manage to have a couple of more good starts toward the, and can continue this pace toward the middle of next year, I get to play in the U.S. Open and the Open Championship based on my world ranking. That's an incredible opportunity. And it, as Matt Fitzpatrick, the Englishman who won the British Masters for his first win, 21 again, his dad said this, and I thought this was a very salient point because I didn't know so many players realize this, but it is absolutely true, that if you get in the top 50 in the world, it is somewhat a self-reinforcing ranking, self-fulfilling ranking, because it gets you into so many great tournaments, it gets you into so many tournaments with no cut and guaranteed world ranking points, that it becomes awfully difficult, and I mean difficult, it gets hard to fall out of the top 50. So long as you play competent golf, you're going to earn enough points to stay in the top 50 because of the sheer gravity of the events that you get into. And that's why it was kind of shocking for Ian Poulter 2 weekends ago to fall out of the top 50 in the world for the first time since September 2006. I mean, that is 9 years in the top 50 in the world. And how many times has Ian Poulter won? Not that many. And he hadn't won an event, period, since the WGC HSBC Champions in 2012. So more or less 3 years without a win, and he managed to stay in the top 50 in the world. That goes on to tell you that getting in means you have a really good chance of staying in. And if you could stay in the top 50 in the world, you pretty much get into every major championship. Either because you're playing well enough or you're earning enough money by proxy, by being in those events, you're going to get in all four majors. You're going to get in the Players. You're going to get in the WGCs. It's a big deal. So what Smiley Kaufman accomplished on Sunday, he will see the fruits of not only for this year but next year. I don't think he realizes what he's accomplished because it's going to make his career so much easier. And I think in one sense, probably somebody like Brett Stagmeier, who has grinded away at the web.com tour to try to figure this thing out, he probably had a really good idea of what was on the line. He probably knew all of the implications that were there for him. But nonetheless, Kaufman's your winner, and he's in, I think, the top 75 in the world now. So he's not that far away from a top 50 spot. And for him, that's great, but it's just another example of a young player, guy in his low 20s, winning on the PGA Tour or winning on a big stage, because we threw out Matt Fitzpatrick winning the British Masters at 21. Got Emiliano Grillo, under 25, I think he's 24, winning the Fries.com Open to start the season. You've got Kaufman, you got Matt Fitzpatrick, you've got the guys we've been talking about all freaking year, Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, Jason Day. Now, those guys are in their, two of those guys are in their later 20s, but they're all in their 20s. And we talked about this before, I believe, on this show, and if I haven't mentioned it, this is kind of mind-blowing, but there are a record number of players under the age of 30 inside the top 100 in the official World Golf Ranking right now. And that is just the proof that you need to know that guys are seeing a youth movement out there, that there is a youth movement happening in professional golf, that we're starting to see guys in their 20s just coming out with no fear, no sense of anxiety of the stage, no reason to collapse. And I think that goes to show the importance of the infrastructure that has been built in this sport for over 20 years now, but is really honed in the last 10, especially with the likes of the AJGA, sports academies like IMG, their academy down in Florida, which produced Paula Creamer, but there are other schools like that. There's the Gary Gilchrist School. There are other ones like that. They're just solely dedicated to developing golfers, not only in this country, but at the national level in other places than the United States. And these kids are getting into great high-profile, well-run tournaments by the time they're 12. I mean, Lucy Lee is, what, 11, 12? And she's not done with popsicles, but she's winning tournaments left and right, and it prepares her well for any stage. Because winning is winning. That was the thing that Tiger Woods discovered really early, that Earl Woods knew, that if you taught your kid how to win at golf, it would translate elsewhere, because nerves are nerves. You can always feel nervous going down the stretch of a golf tournament. If you're in it to win it, nerves apply. And I can speak about that from personal experience. I've never won a high-profile golf tournament. I've won a junior club championship, a couple of those. And I've won twice now what's called the Greensburg Cup, my in-laws' family tournament every year in March. And it's a handicap tournament. We have 16 guys, usually between 12 and 16 guys. And there are players from range of kind of my skill level, 3, 4, 5 handicap, all the way up to like 30. And we play with those handicaps. You play match play. It happens over 3 days, and you crown a winner. And both times that I've won, I felt extremely nervous. The second time, this past year when I won, or this year when I won, I was still nervous, and I knew I had it in the bag. And I was nervous because, I don't know. I mean, you never know what can happen. You could just drop dead and lose. And I think that for whatever reason, the uncertainty of the finishing golf, no matter the level, no matter the competition, breeds a kind of nervousness that can apply elsewhere. If you learn to handle it, you'll learn to accept it and maybe even embrace it and thrive under it, that you can become a great player. And if you do it time and time and time and time again where other people can't or don't, then you have a distinct advantage. And that's why guys like Smiley Kaufman and Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy and all these guys are winning. They're winning because they have that experience. Because when they get into that situation, they don't clam up, play safe. They decide they're going to play big boy golf regardless of the stakes, regardless of the situation, and they perform because they've done it before. And what we're seeing now is the youth movement in our sport is thanks to that infrastructure. It is thanks to junior golf infrastructure that treats these kids like they are mini professionals, that commands of them high stakes, high profile, big situations against equally talented players who have futures in the sport if they want to pursue them. And that mano-a-mano situation, that person-to-person situation, that builds character. It builds the ability to win. It builds the ability to persevere through your nerves, through that vomit feeling you have on the tee when you know you got a chance to win. And because these guys in their lower 20s and late 20s, I guess, have processed that so many times throughout their lives, it's not to say that it's easy, but it's easier to deal with. And then the next question is, can you play your style of golf under those circumstances? These guys have consistently showed, especially in the last 24 months, that is the case. And they're going to get the job done if you give them the chance. Meanwhile, you've got guys in their 30s and 40s that are trying to win golf tournaments, and they're trying to do it by just walking gently over the finish line. Guys in their 20s are just sprinting to their finish. And those guys used to be cautious too, because that was the way you won a golf tournament. You got yourself in a position, and then you kind of played small ball to figure it out. That is not how golf is played anymore. Not because of these guys' experiences, part, and the other part is equipment. Because if you stand on the tee and you are a big, strong kid, or you're just a strong swing, you got a good swing speed, you make great contact, you don't have to be big and jacked up. But if you know you can pipe one 315 or more down the middle, or at least on the planet, and all you got to do is hit a wedge onto the green and two putt to win, you're going to do it. I mean, that seems really easy. If you told me that all I had to do was smoke one down the left or right side of a fairway, keep it within reason, don't hit it out of bounds, hit a wedge onto a green and two putt, I could do that. You could do that. If you were told you had the talent level to hit a 315 off the tee, you could do that. And I think that these guys, knowing that they've got that in their arsenal, they've got that length available to them, that they could turn it on in a moment's notice and feel confident that it's going to stay not only in a 60-yard grid a la the long drivers of America, but stay in a 30-yard space as wide as a fairway, even smaller, like Ricky Fowler did, piping went, 335 on the 72nd hole of the Players, and he hit that drive because he knew he could do it. Whereas players with better resumes hit iron and fairway wood and hybrid and all that. And Fowler said, no, what am I doing this for? I'm going to go out there and get it down there as far as I can because I believe I can do it. And they do it. There's no nerves. There's no snap hook. There's no 50-yard push. There's no top. Just there it is. Deal with it. Wedge over. And because these guys have short irons in their hands, it gives them so much more confidence to hit that critical approach shot, whether you need par or birdie, sometimes eagle. But when they know they've got a short iron in their hand that they have masterfully controlled, They have total confidence that they can pull off the shot. What's to stop them? It's a different brand of golf versus if you stood in the middle of the fairway, we'll take the Sawgrass example again. You hit the long iron, you hit the 3-wood. You have 185 left to a pin tucked on the left side of the green that is on a green tucked next to a water hazard that runs the length of the hole, the left side of the hole. It gets an awful, that target gets an awful lot smaller, much smaller. And I think that if you're doing it with a 9-iron, it's pitch and putt. It's practice. It's easy. And the combination of modern equipment that allows these guys to fearlessly drive the ball as long as possible, and they do it with resounding accuracy, in combination with their tournament experience at the junior and a high amateur level, and that includes the depth of talent now that exists in the collegiate level that may have existed before, but not really to this extent. And these guys are exposed to every situation and can do it with confidence. And that's why Smiley Kaufman won. That's why he shot 61. In part also because he was 7 back. He had nothing to lose. But when you realize your name's going up the board and you go look at the board, you go, well, I got a chance to win this thing. He didn't back down. He won this thing. Good for him. That's really important. Builds confidence, and that sets up a situation where he can win again. Now, of course, golf is fickle. I mean, you think about Keegan Bradley, won the 2011 PGA Championship in his first major championship appearance. Had a couple of great seasons. 2011 and 12 were very good. And now he's kind of fallen off the planet a little bit. That is in part due to confidence in putting. Ultimately, and I truly believe this, putting doesn't last forever. That's not your skill forever. But you have a period, if you're a good putter, where you're probably a great putter until you're about 36, 37 years old. And then the nerves kind of... Your hands shake a little bit more. It gets a little bit more difficult to get that putter blade back to square when it matters most. If three-footers look a little bit longer, that hole looks a little bit smaller. But for these guys that are coming out with confidence in the ability to win in their early 20s, that gives them more or less, if you're a good putter, a 15-year window to do your damage. You're no longer waiting till you're 25 or 26 or 27 to just start thinking about winning. Forget that. You're winning now. And that gives you that self-reinforcement that you can do it again and again and again. That confidence that you can make it happen when it's crunch time. And I think that's going to lead to kind of a partial phasing out of PGA Tour players that cannot and will not play that aggressive brand of golf. That they can't forget the last bad shot and they remember all the good ones. And I know golf has a tendency to build scar tissue, but for whatever reason, these guys haven't built it. Or maybe they won't build it. Or maybe they haven't built it yet. I don't know the answer to that. This is kind of one of those longitudinal things. Eventually, we'll figure out what happens to these guys when bad things happen. But so far, it doesn't seem like it lasts very long when bad things happen. Seems like they get right back up on the horse and keep doing things the exact same way they were doing. And the intriguing thing to me about all of these guys in particular are Jason Day and Rory McIlroy, because they're not great putters. They're streaky putters. And when they feel very confident over the ball and the technique works, then they're almost untouchable because they're so great from tee to green. But McIlroy admitted this week going into the Turkish Airlines Open that he doesn't feel very confident over the ball, that it's a mental thing for him. And frankly, I think it's an approach thing. You got to get a little tweak every now and then, especially McIlroy from a guy like Dave Stockton. But when you don't feel good over the ball when you're trying to putt, it makes it a whole lot harder to play good golf. It adds that creep of doubt into that tee shot. Because what if you don't put it in the fairway? What if you don't hit a 330 and you've got to manage to gouge it out and you leave yourself 35 feet instead of 15 feet? You're not going to make that 35-footer very often. You might make that 15-footer a fair amount of time. So you're putting more pressure in your putting game to two-putt or try to one-putt if you're facing a guy that's sticking close to the pin and making putt after putt. And so, ultimately, I think that you have to be a well-rounded player. This next generation, and you can kind of start to see the change right now, and I think you will see this, that for as much as we emphasize distance among our players now, and we've just talked about it here, ultimately you're going to have to be able to putt. You're going to have to be able to putt in the Jordan Spieth era. Because if you can't putt against Jordan Spieth or other guys that have a good putting stroke, then not only are they going to hit it long enough to give them a short iron, they're going to put a short iron to a range where they know they can make it more often than not. And the way they know you won't make it more often than not, which adds pressure on them and confidence for you. So, or vice versa, confidence to your opponent and doubt for you. Look at Emiliano Grillo. Couldn't make a 3-foot putt to win on the first playoff hole. That's going to come back to bite him at some point. That bad putting stroke, those nerves under pressure. He's got to be able to corral those and make that 3-footer, make that 7-footer. If he can do that, then he's going to be a prolific winner. If he can't, then he's going to be one of those guys that wins every now and then, but isn't going to be a consistent winner. And I think that's kind of the line we're trying to figure out here, is in trying to determine who's going to be the next great player. Not the next Tiger Woods. I don't think we're going to see that guy anymore. There's not going to be another guy that wins 80 times on the PGA Tour. Tiger's case, 79. But whatever. There's not going to be another one of those guys. The competition is too deep. And because the competition is too deep, and because these guys hit the ball so far, you've relegated the game to, can you drive the ball straight this week and can you get a short iron in your hand? Because if you can do those two things, that pretty much opens up the rest of the game. It allows you to pick and choose your spots. It allows you to be more aggressive. It allows you to go for par fives. It makes the game easier. And then the question mark becomes, can you putt? And if you can putt, then you're going to win more often than not. And that's why Jordan Spieth wins so frequently. It's not because he's long or extremely long. He's long enough, and he's good with mid-irons and short-irons. And he's an incredible putter. Best mid-range putter in the world. And because he's got those things going for him, being long enough counts. So, as length becomes more important in the game, fitness becomes more important in the game, Spieth's going to try and gain 10, 15 yards. And if he does, great. If not, it's probably not going to be that big of a deal for the next 4 or 5 years. But this next crop of guys, these guys are 21, 22, 23, 24 now, and Spieth's part of that. They're going to get longer. And that's going to be the point of emphasis. And maybe that changes how courses are set up. Maybe that changes course design. Maybe that changes where bunkers are. Maybe that changes green speeds and rough depth and how the PGA Tour treats all those things. I don't know. But with the way things look right now, you're going to have to be able to be a well-rounded player. Got to be aggressive. Got to be fairly long, if not extremely. And you got to putt. And if you can't do those three things, you just won't win. You can't have 2 of 3 and win. You can't have 1 of 3 and win. So that's the challenge facing guys that are streaky putters. You might be a great ball striker. You might be really long. But if you can't putt, you're going to have a hard time winning. Ask Jason Day. He won with his absolute best stuff this summer. 4 times. He beat Jordan Spieth by 3 strokes in the PGA Championship because he made a lot of putts. A lot of great iron shots. So, if you got to play perfect golf to win a great putter who's above average length, playing really good golf, I think that goes to tell you how important that putting skill is. So, it'll be interesting to see how these guys handle it, how these guys develop as putters, because I think you can become a great putter. I don't think you're a born putter. I think you can figure it out. I've become a much better putter over the course of my lifetime playing golf, which is 20 years. And I've become a lot better at it because I've found something that works for me. And the approach is different for everybody, but I found something that works for me. And when I stand over that putt when it matters most, I believe in it. And that's the key factor, believing in it. We'll see if these guys, especially Griot and Day and McIlroy, they're more streaky guys. If they kind of fall back a little bit as more and more good putters come along, or will these guys fail to deliver on putting as a skill as a cohort in their 20s? And that opens the door for a dominant player that can putt like a Jordan Spieth. We've got so much intrigue in the next couple of years because there's so many good names that are here, that are coming up, and that haven't won yet. And we're going to have a really good crop of them, and then we'll see how it shakes out. But I think right now, the way that you got to look at it is these guys all have very similar length. There aren't very many short knockers that are winning golf tournaments. And these guys have a ton of confidence. But once they start playing against each other on the biggest stages, will they realize the one skill that should distinguish them is putting, and that if they don't have it, that they could develop it? And will they? That's a question for the next 4 or 5 years of the sport. And if they can't, and the true skill, as I think, is putting, that Jordan Spieth is going to win a lot of major championships and leave these guys in the dust. It's going to be fascinating. One last thing I wanted to talk about before we go, and that is Ian Poulter. Poulter made a world, basically a trip around halfway around the world, if not more so, last week on Tuesday, knowing that he had to play in the UBS Hong Kong Open. It's the last regular season event on the European Tour schedule. It was the last open event available for players on the schedule. Poulter needed to play in it because he had lost his eligibility or his exemption at the time to play in the HSBC Champions in 2 weeks from the Hong Kong Open. And that if he didn't play in the Hong Kong Open and didn't get into the HSBC Champions, he wouldn't satisfy the 13 tournament minimum for European Tour membership, meaning he wouldn't be a European Tour member next year, also meaning he wouldn't be eligible to play in the Ryder Cup on the European side because you have to be a European Tour member to be on the European Ryder Cup team, either as a captain's pick or as an automatic qualifier. So Rich Beam graciously gave up his sponsor's exemption, the only thing available to Poulter to use to get to the event because the entry deadline had closed. He flew around halfway around the world, three-quarters around the world to play in the event, and then played great for two rounds and kind of crapped out. But he completed the start and made a decent check. And then chose him in Turkey for this week's Turkish Airlines Open. Again, an event where he's played really, really well. It's a couple, I think, runner-up finish, top five finish. And he comes on Golf Channel and says, you know, golf just isn't that important. It doesn't matter that much to me. And for whatever reason, this thing has changed him, this whole to-do about trying to save his membership. And he says there's more important things than golf, and that he's disappointed that he couldn't spend time with what he said was 192 children that were flown in by a UK-based charity called Dream Flight that sends seriously ill or physically disabled children, sends them to Orlando on an unaccompanied vacation to the area. So they go to Disney World, they go to other things in town, and they'll have their parents with them. Just kind of let them have a little bit of freedom to do something cool. And Poulter's been involved with this charity for years, and he had to basically walk out on those obligations because he needed to save his European Tour membership, and that really bothered him. I obviously don't know how long this feeling is going to resonate with Poulter, whether this is a permanent change or temporary one, whether if he has a good week this week in Turkey, shot 69 to open, 3 under, he's 8 back. If he has a good week in Turkey, whether it just kind of sparks on the back end and will become normal Poulter. But I thought it was really remarkable for him to say, I've done so many good things in 15, 16 years, but golf just isn't that important. I'm going to play for me. I'm going to play for fun now and from now on. And if I do that, I believe I will get back in the top 50 in the world. I believe I will play in major tournaments without problem, and I believe I will win them, which is a really interesting point to me. And I wonder, the guy like Poulter, who has been a Ryder Cup killer for basically a decade, I wonder if that guy got to be who he was because he committed himself so much to the concept of playing for continent and not himself. That was what drove him to play for his continent again and again and again. And not necessarily to play for himself. And maybe that's why he struggles to win singles titles. Maybe that's why you don't see his name atop a lot of leaderboards. But when every other September or October comes, he's freaking Superman. Maybe that's the case. And if Poulter can find a way to channel that energy and that intensity to enjoying himself playing for his own personal gain, then maybe that'll make him a better competitor week to week on the PGA Tour. But I also wonder if something like this can really change somebody. And I believe so. I believe a singular event can change someone like that. It happens all the time. But I wonder also if this isn't happening to more and more golfers, where at some point, hopping in private jets or commercial jets, whatever, most of these guys fly private, all around the world to chase money and chase golf tournaments, chase trophies. And we're not talking the major championships. Those drive every major player. But the Turkish Airlines Opens of the world, they're big tournaments. They got a big purse. They offer good money. But are they really that important? No. I don't think that they are. If you rack up a lot of them, then they matter. Ask Tiger Woods. But if you have 5 career wins and they're all in this kind of events in the middle of nowhere no one cares about, even you, what did you do all that for? Money? Yeah. I mean, and Poulter at a certain point has to kind of realize that professional golf gave him the opportunity to live the lifestyle he lives, where he has a bazillion Porsches and lives in a really nice house in Orlando and has the free time to help 192 children have a wonderful time in Orlando, Florida. He has to realize that. I'm sure it's somewhere he realizes that consciously, that there's a moment, and it's not hypocrisy. There's a moment I think every golfer goes through this that's a really good one. Even the bad ones, the ones that are relatively bad to their peers, they have to give up golf and they go, is this worth it anymore? Or do I just want to stop and be a normal person? I just want to stop and be a dad or a mom or a son or a daughter. I just want to be me. Private me. Not public golfer me with all these logos on my chest and hat and arms and bag and whatever else. Just want to be a person and not travel all the time and play golf for fun, not for a job. And I know that that happens, but I think we really got, for one of maybe the first times in recent memory, a very public acknowledgement of that moment. And I think that's important to reflect on, because for as much as we love the sport, we love to see these guys play, and we know that they play for millions and make millions, that ultimately it's a really tough life. And like any professional athlete, you have a very limited time span to make your pay. Even in golf, where your lifespan is long compared to other sports, it's getting shorter. Young guys are coming to take your place. We talked about the first half of the show. Guys make their money, and I don't necessarily believe the Champions Tour is going to be here for all that much longer, because guys are going to cut off their career at 45, not 50 or 55. They're going to stick around forever. So maybe the Champions Tour becomes a little bit younger, 45. Is the money enough? Is the cozy travel schedule enough to keep guys willing to play? I don't know. But the global nature of the sport may be bringing guys to the point of flaming out much sooner. And that there might be an argument that careers are going to get shorter. Not because the money is good, because the travel's crazy. And the pursuit of what's possible, your potential, not only in terms of how you play golf, but your earning potential, may drive you to quit or walk away a whole lot sooner than previous generations. And I don't know if that's a good thing or not, but it is something to keep an eye on. That's going to do it for us on the show this week. Next week on the show, we'll talk about the CIMB Classic over in Malaysia, see if anybody got typhoid. We'll also talk about the Turkish Airlines Open, the Blue Bay LPGA over in Taiwan this week on the LPGA Tour. And we'll round up any other important golf news of the week. Please give us a 5-star review if you check us out on iTunes. We appreciate it. We'd love to hear your comments and questions either through that review section or email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Follow me on Twitter @RyanBallingy or on facebook.com/golfnewsnet. Thanks again for subscribing to the show. We really appreciate it. And we'll talk to you next week on the 19th Hole Golf Show.